Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from Southern Florida. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. It's always a pleasure to join you. Thanks for inviting me on.
The U.S. debt ceiling, officially, you've hit it. The U.S. government, I guess, technically is out of money. What's the story? And if it is, does that mean stocks are going to collapse because there's no confidence in the U.S. government?
That story is always good for a laugh, you know. Mm-hmm. You got to wonder about these congressional shenanigans. And, of course, it spawns the punditry gets out there and talks about how dire things could get if they don't pass a budget. But we're still here. So I don't know. What, compared to the big numbers, $30 trillion numbers that we owe, at the federal level, then it's like, what's one budget that's a couple months late or whatever? And of course, there are a lot of us who are secretly wishing that the government would shut down, just I'm not saying forever, but just for 3 or 4 months, and we'd get to see if things still functioned.
In Canada, if the government can't pass its budget, that's called a vote of no confidence, and they have to call an election. Should you have the same system in the U.S.? If you can't pass a budget, you have to call an election and get people in who can either agree or disagree on a budget?
That'd be creating a political football like no other, really. You're just asking for trouble when you have this vote of new confidence and calling a new election. I mean, we don't work with a, you know, maybe we need a parliament, but that's not coming anytime soon.
I don't think so. But if the, because I've heard the last time this happened several years ago, this really came to a wall in August when they said, no, they started laying off people, putting them on furlough, not making payments on certain items. Do you think this is going to go all the way down to August and a big showdown? And this is a Republican-dominated House that needed 15 votes to just pick a speaker.
Yeah, that word dominated, by the way, is it's kind of ironic, really, but also funny when you talk about Republicans dominating. They're they're not exactly in dominatrix mode right now, as far as I can tell.
The IMF says the UK will have the poorest economic performance this year of any major economic nation, including Russia. Russia's going to have a better economic performance. Is this the hangover of Brexit 3 years later?
No, I think it's a 200-year hangover from a nation of shopkeepers. And I think they were good at the time when the sun never set on the British Empire, because they had their, you know, they had dominion over quite a bit of the earth, for better or worse, in countries like, let's say, India. You know, and for a while they were, the economy was revived with the North Sea oil, and then it got re-revived when London became a financial center. And of course, that's the big money. When you get a lot of BS money that flows into your channel, that can only help. But right now, the action in high finance is somewhat diffused and kind of a funk. So that's really Britain's problem, which again goes back to the nation of shopkeepers thing.
Now, in Canada, at least statistics for the cost of living don't include how much a person has to pay for their mortgage. So if you have a $1,000 or $2,000 increase in the cost of your mortgage, which to you personally is super inflationary, hyperinflationary, in the eyes of the government, you don't exist. Is this willful blindness by our governments? They don't acknowledge the plight that homeowners face with increasingly higher mortgage rates.
Well, I mean, it takes a lot of chutzpah to demand a statistic that it actually reflects reality. And certainly the government doesn't want rising mortgage rates and prices to monthly payments to get in the way of a statistical sleight of hand that every month can be jiggled to make it look however they want. So, and it's sort of like the Dow Industrials stock index. Why mess the index up with stocks that go down? Let's just put over time we substitute in all these indexes the stocks that go up. So it's just like every other statistical game. It's completely rigged.
Churchill was right. There are lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Indeed. And I can't, you know, usually you're asking the questions, but the question I have for you is, how do we get to 2.9% GDP in the U.S. and, of course, an even more absurd 3.2% last month, when anybody can look around and see we're slipping deeper into the recessionary muck? You know, I don't have any, just about every friend I talk to with the business is working very hard just to stay afloat. In some key businesses, one that we talked about 6 or 9 months ago when there was still this debate about whether we were in recession, was a guy in the shipping pallet business. And I can't think of a better mined canary for the U.S. and global economies than shipping pallets. So, things were going in a tank. And more recently, still going in the tank. Prices are literally collapsing in what I would call a key bellwether, a bellwether product. And the same thing, Zero Hedge with it was out with the story. It was talking about a collapse in the demand for cardboard boxes. And, this is certainly, it's important, and it is, affirmed, correlated, corroborated by all the layoffs we're seeing in the pumped up, formerly pumped up high tech sector. So we've got layoffs going around all over the place. And yet we've got a statistic that the U.S. economy, quote unquote, grew by 2.9% in the last quarter. I'd love to hear what John Williams at Shadow Stats has to say about that. But for my part, you know, when I write about the economy, I write it as a given. I take it as a given that we're in a deepening recession, and I always put it that way. But I was a little startled to see that the statistics purport to show 2.9% growth, and I start to wonder whether they've reweighted the most meaningless statistic of them all, employment, you know, job creation. Whether they've reweighted that so that that's 80% of GDP growth. And of course, as you know, I was mentioning earlier, they'll strip out anything that seems to be slowing growth, quote unquote, growth down. So it is mystifying though that at the statistical official level, we've got what I see as a flagrant fraud. The idea that the economy, quote unquote, grew at 2.9% last quarter.
Yeah, there's statistics and then there's the eyeball. And I live across from a major container port and I can go days without one container ship being there. A year ago, it was packed. They were lined up to get in.
Yeah, it's hard to fathom. You wind up, you know, do you believe the stats or your lying eyes? But just talk to anybody who's got a business, and I'm even speaking of even people I know in the medical profession. They're not quite crying hard times, but they're working harder than ever to pay for the office space.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what do you think is going to happen with the Dow? It decent in January, not outstanding, I don't think, but your opinion on that, and where is it going to go?
Well, I'm following Apple as my bellwether, and it's very hard for me to envision new all-time highs, which, of course, would correspond to new all-time highs for the stock market. Apple's looking a little bit worse than the Dow. Mainly because you've got this company that sells overpriced consumer hardware facing a global recession or worse. But we're almost certainly in a bear rally right now, but the strength of it is always inversely proportional to how bearish people are. So it'll tend to go as high as it needs to convince the bears that maybe they're wrong this time. So I don't know. I have to say, if I were to give you just a very precise number for the Dow, it would be at 35,371, I think it is. That was a peak that was made back in April of 2022. And I think once we're above that, we're currently at 33,723. So we've got a couple thousand points there. But if the market can get there, then it's probably going to test the all-time Dow high that was made back in January of 2022 at about just below 37,000. So this has been definitely a bear rally worthy of the name, and it's the second that we've had. The first took place between June of last year and August. So we had a good summer rally, and this one began back in mid-October, and the Dow started at 28,660, I think it is, and reached a recent peak a month or so ago at 34,7. So I have to think it's going to die right here, that the 34,7 peak was the important one, and we're not going to get above it, but I would still allow for a further rally. And again, this is a precise number that you could conceivably use to get short. It's a voodoo number is what I call it. And it's somewhere around, well, just above 35,000. So that's 1,300 points from where we are now. So I'm leaving room for that. But anything above that, I'm going to be hard pressed to tell everybody just jump on this short the bejesus out of it and don't even look at your screen after that.
Gold, what do you see for that?
It's in a great rally here. I don't have much doubt that we're embarking on a new bull market, but you know, bull markets begin in different ways, and some begin with such a powerful lurch that they're unmistakable, even though at the time, 1982, I did mistake it. I only had a very knowledgeable friend of mine say, yeah, it was as clear as a bell. So gold made its low back in November. And the COMEX gold bottomed then around 1640-something, and we've hit a recent high of 1966. So we've had a pretty good move here, and one of the things that I like about gold's rally is that each new big rally leg up takes out some peaks that were made on the way down, mainly from the high in the first quarter of 2022 to that October low. So the rally looks good technically, and it just feels good, even though on days like today you're thinking, well, geez, why doesn't it get in gear? But it just—it's being restrained somewhat because the big guys know that if there's going to be this tone change in gold, they need to accumulate as much as they can at current levels. So they're not eager to have it just take off. And any time it does, you can expect a pretty serious retrenchment because just remember, gold, like everything else, is 100% manipulated. There's no such thing as a legitimate trade between a bull and a bear.
The crude market, what do you expect there?
Well, as I'm always mentioning, crude baffles me, really. You know, when it's rallying, you think, what's going on here? We take the biggest impactor on crude's price at the margin, China, and China is not exactly in some kind of manufacturing resurgence. So I'm never quite believing the rallies in crude, but I do think that the downtrend begun in NYMEX back in June from around 104, 105 bucks a barrel, touched a low in the last quarter of last year down around 70. So it came down pretty hard, but I think it's going to continue down, at least into the low 60s. We're currently trading 76 bucks on the March NYMEX.
Anything of interest on the crypto front?
Well, crypto is always interesting to me because it's just a hoax that made good, you know. And crypto is absolutely, to a greater extent even than the drug stocks and the stocks that are completely controlled, it's manipulated by what I would call smart money. In this case, the smart money got trapped so badly at prices so high that you got to realize that there's enormous supply above 25,000. But it's not the kind of fixed supply that occurs when the little guys all get schmeiced. You know, just give me a rally to 25 or 30 or whatever. Bitcoin's, the value moves. It's very fluid. And you can see that it's almost made to go up and down at will. So we have a distribution in the 18 to 20 range. And when it doesn't, when they can't get when they can't get Bitcoin to take off, they bring it down in just a day or two to a new accumulation range, or I think I said distribution, but they're really trying to accumulate and to find a level where they can, that they can use for a launch. So they're very patient, and of course, a few weeks ago, they got their opportunity when we had this rumor that the Philippines, Canada, and the U.S. had paid a ransom in crypto to whoever hacked their air flight systems. So that was a boost for crypto, and you had a very cleverly timed announcement that we're going to try to revive FTX. That's the crypto exchange that was bankrupted by the criminal Sam Bankman-Fried. So those things together gave the crypto hoodlums the opportunity they were looking for to just goose the stock. There's no real supply up to about 25,000. So in this case, the goosing took it from around 15,000 to a current 23,000. It's trading, it's actually traded just slightly above that level in the last week or two. But I think 25 is really where even the big guys start thinking, you know, I promised I would get rid of, I'd bail out if we got to 25, and some of them actually will. So you have between 25 and 30. If it gets past 25, it's open water until around 31,000, 32,000. And above that, a giant void up to 50,000. So if crypto is interesting because it's tending to lead the market just slightly, so that if everything's down and crypto's up a measly, like microscopic $20 or something, it's saying something. It's very knowledgeable in the sense that it's reading selling in the broad averages as just kind of, you know, phony, it'll pass, and so crypto's good. It's good almost on a day trading basis just to stay kind of a step ahead of the hourly mood changes. But ultimately, I think crypto is going a lot lower, and because it really has no intrinsic value. And as far as the 21 million original mintage of Bitcoin, or the limit placed on Bitcoin, I don't see limited supply as the sole criterion for money you know, much less for money where the demand has turned toward insanity. You know, I could see a value of $4, $5, $6 for crypto because it does facilitate transactions in a secure way, but it doesn't do it as well as credit cards. And also, I don't know if anybody noticed, but about 99.99% of all transactions in crypto had nothing to do with buying or selling stuff. It was just purely speculative. It's like the old joke about, no, these aren't eating sardines, these are trading sardines.
Rick, talking about a collapse in a market, NFTs, do they even exist anymore? Are people still putting $200,000 into non-existent virtual real estate?
I hope they are, because in a way it works a little bit like the Darwin Awards, you know, that we were trying to eliminate from the gene pool, people who would kill themselves in such stupid ways that the death itself became laughable. But in the same way, you know, if you've got people still paying 6, 7, 8 figures for NFTs of anything, whether it's art or the rights to this or that, I hope they keep paying it, because that will help extinguish them from the gene pool as well. But the death knell for NFTs was that art sale where somebody paid, I don't remember, but it would have been equivalent to, you know, $4 trillion for a Rothko or a Jackson Pollock or something like that. But it wasn't. It was just an NFT. And you realize that if someone can be paying, you know, whatever it was, tens of billions of dollars for a painting, that just sort of brought home the ridiculousness of NFTs. That it demonstrated to people that they're nothing. They don't have any value. They're just sort of a figment of the imagination of people who write letters to Wired magazine.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Jim. And if your listeners want more, they can just go to rickackerman.com and click up top for a free 2-week trial.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.